He took the harness from Cleaver, staring at it a moment before adding, "Throw down some flares so it's not just me and my one light. Okay?" Nova stood on the platform of Drill Site 9, her ray rifle aimed at the catwalk.
"You sure you don't want to regroup with the others?"
"In a minute," Dylan said. She was leaning over the guardrail, scanning the base of the ravine. They'd already cased sites 6 through 8, each providing a slightly better view of the river running through the chasm below. But that's all there was to see. The chasm, the river. "They found bodies," Nova argued.
"And we're casing these drill points before we leave, in case there are bodies out this way, too."
Dylan shoved off the guardrail.
"Let's move. One site left."
Nova clenched the rifle to calm her fingers. There was no denying she was on edge. Granted, Nova was always on edge unless she was flying, and she wasn't trained for this type of search and rescue. The only person who was Cleaver, and he wasn't what Nova would consider the smartest or most cautious of their group. And now Dylan had ordered him to reel in a deceased Black Quarry member as if they were on a harmless fishing trip. Nova followed Dylan back onto the catwalk.
"With all due respect," she said as they walked, "I think we should turn around."
"We will, after we see to the final drill site."
"We shouldn't have come to the drilling base, period. I know you're worried about your father, Dylan, but we should have updated Hevitz already. We should be acting on their orders."
"I'm in charge here, and we're acting on mine."
"You think that's what your father would want? For you to charge forward without..."
Dylan spun so suddenly that Nova nearly collided with her.
"You know nothing about what he'd want," Dylan hissed through her teeth.
Her eyes were icy behind her visor, her jaw clenched.
"True," Nova admitted. "Come to think of it, we worked that job on Eutheria, then Northwood Point, now this, and I still don't think I know a damn thing about you, Dylan. I've spent the last 6 months shuttling you to operations, living in the same claustrophobic base, and all I know is your name, rank, and that you smile less than my flight instructor back at the academy."
Dylan smirked. Nova needed to start counting smirks as full points, not half points, or she was never going to break that 3 smiles in a day record. Still, that put today's tally at 1.5. The captain steeled her expression, raised her chin.
"My father would want me to not be a failure. Overseeing Hevitz research ops at the age of 23 is a failure?
Go ask your cousin. He's on to the truth."
It didn't surprise Nova that Dylan knew what was being said behind her back. The woman was smart. The surprise was that she was bothered by it. Nova had always assumed Dylan had skin too thick to care what others thought.
"I got kicked out of the academy too, you know," she said, glancing sternly at Nova. "My father's done everything in his power to cover it up, to pretend it never happened, to give me the kind of position I might have had if I'd graduated. Research forewoman sure isn't on par with flight captain, though."
"You were training to be a pilot, too?"
Dylan nodded.
"What happened?"
"Ricks."
"Holy shit,"
Nova mumbled. Ricks Token was the drug equivalent of a massive energy drink. It gave an insane boost of energy and laser focus, and Nova had heard stories of desperate Academy pilots taking it to boost their scores. But the stuff had nasty side effects with prolonged use, including short-term memory loss and blackouts. It was highly addictive and grounds for immediate expulsion. Most pilots knew it wasn't worth the risk.
"I'd never not been the best at something," Dylan went on. "But suddenly I was competing with the most skilled pilots in the whole damn union, and I needed an edge to put me ahead. Ricks kept me sharp in the beginning. My scores jumped. I was top of the class for a few months. Then I started getting sloppy. My roommate confronted me about it, and I shrugged her off, told her she was just jealous that I was finally outscoring her. I blacked out during a training drill a week later. Came to before crashing or doing any damage to others, but she still ratted me out to our superiors. They ordered a drug test, and I was gone. Out. blacklisted forever. Dylan shrugged like this wasn't a big deal.
Dear old dad put me in rehab till I was clean, then got me a job at Hevitz, paid some buddies to wipe my name from Academy Records, and told me to start going by my middle name.
Dylan's not your real name?
It's Alexa, she said. Alexa Dylan Lowe.
It didn't suit her.
It's all still there, if you dig enough, of course. Hevitz knew I was a risk. They're just doing my dad a favor, and so I've gotta impress.
We're alike in that way, Dylan said.
Damaged goods. Liabilities. One fuck-up, and we're out.
I'm not a liability, Nova said. I was top of my class, and I'm still a damn good pilot. It's the Academy that has shit rules and lets administration lackeys who've never logged a single flight hour decide that surgery somehow makes you unfit to pilot for the military.
Dylan rolled her eyes, as if Nova was being overly sensitive at having her eye condition lumped in with expulsion for drug use. Nova didn't choose to get that degenerative condition and lose some of her peripheral vision, but Dylan chose Rick's. She chose to put that needle in her arm.
Look, I don't talk about this shit much, but I need someone to have my back, Dylan said, and I know I can trust you. So, just help me find my dad or the crew or whatever the hell happened here, and once we've got answers, I can update Hevitz and we'll both be in their good graces. Maybe they'll even offer you permanent work.
It was what Nova was after, but as she continued to follow Dylan down the catwalk, her stomach twisted. For months now, Nova had been feeding info about her own life to Dylan in hopes that Dylan might offer something in return. And now here was this dark secret, a blemish on Dylan's otherwise perfect resume, and she'd shared it with Nova, along with a declaration of trust. It should have made Nova's insides beam. It should have been worth 20 smiles. But instead, Nova felt as if she'd been dealt a negative blow. Dylan was still trying to prove herself. It was like Rick's all over again, an unpredictable risk taken with the hopes that it would put her ahead. The difference was, this time, she wasn't merely playing with her own life. She was playing with everyone's.
Did you see the SOS on Odyssey?
In the updates Hevitz sent? Nova asked. Did they order us to sit tight and wait for the backup crew?
Is that what you really think of me?
Dylan snarled, whirling on Nova, her blue eyes flashing behind her visor.
That I'd knowingly put my crew in danger?
Yes. Maybe. I don't know.
You tell me.
I'm the captain, Nova.
I don't have to answer a question like that.
She turned and marched on, and the truth coiled and tightened in Nova's stomach, making her nauseated. Whether Dylan trusted Nova was irrelevant. Nova couldn't trust her. Toby pushed off the maintenance ladder and swung out over the chasm, one hand curled around the belay line as the body bag dangled from the other. The harness was riding up between his legs with more force than was comfortable, and the pile of bodies looked a lot farther off now that he wasn't standing on the landing.
I better get one hell of a raise for this.
Cleaver worked the belay system, adjusting the speed. Toby tried not to look down. He'd never much liked heights, but when the intern tossed three flares after him, he couldn't help but follow their glow to the pile of deceased below. The flares landed without a sound, forming a small triangle that flickered and glinted. The red glow danced over the nearest corpses in a way just creepy enough to make their icy skin suddenly appear tinged with life. He could see blood now, on their uniforms, their hands and necks and faces. Most didn't appear to have obvious wounds. It was almost as if the blood was merely paint, smeared across their skin for reasons he couldn't fathom. Toby's stomach twisted. He hated blood. There was a reason he stuck to computers and databases, why he hid behind a desk. Code couldn't cut a person. Far sooner than he was ready, his feet touched down. The bodies were frozen solid, and Toby's boots went sliding off a torso. The belay line tightened, and the harness caught him, jerking uncomfortably around his crotch. He found his footing, and the line let up a little, the harness relaxing. The man between Toby's feet was face down in the pile. He wore a pair of coveralls, a driller or mechanic, most likely, but the material making up one of the sleeves had been ripped open, and where blood didn't stain the man's exposed skin, Toby could make out a sleeve of tattoos.
"Don't think about what happened or how they ended up here. Don't psych yourself out. Just get the guy in the bag and be done with it."
Toby shook out the body bag and laid it alongside the corpse. Then he grabbed the man beneath the arms and hauled him toward the bag. Or tried to. The pressure of the oxygen reserves on Toby's shoulders seemed to have tripled, and the frozen body might as well have weighed a metric ton. He'd died, and subsequently frozen, in an odd position. One leg was straight, the other had rolled outward at the hip, so that no matter how Toby tried to shove him into the body bag, that damn leg was always going to be cocked to the side, impossible to zip in. He wrestled with the limbs, the zipper, the limbs again. Sweat beaded on Toby's brow, dripped into his eyes. With the corpse halfway in the bag and the zipper mostly secure except for that damn leg, Toby reached for his harness. The plan was to unfasten, clip the body bag in, and have Cleaver haul it up. Then they'd drop the line again to retrieve Toby. But with the clip in his grasp, Toby paused. The thought of staying down here, truly alone as the line towed up the body bag, was terrifying. His footing no longer seemed steady. Granted, it had been hell to find a way to balance on this heap of death to begin with, but now he felt as if the ground was shifting beneath him, like the pile was sand in an hourglass and he was about to fall through. No, it wasn't just in his head. Toby could really feel something. He froze, looked down. The bodies jolted beneath his feet. Toby's ankle sank into the corpses, and then something pulled him. He plunged down, the belay not locking until he was waist-deep in the bodies.
"Pull me up!" he screamed. "Something's got me! Pull me up! Pull me up!"
Pain seared across his leg, and he felt burning cold. His visor went wild with alerts. Spiked pulse, erratic breathing, oxygen levels plummeting. He flailed, grabbing at the belay line, trying to pull himself up. Above, the landing was a small dark smudge, barely visible through the feedback in his helmet. The harness heaved around him, and for a brief second, Toby worried he might be torn in two. But then he lurched free of the corpse pile. He swung and spun on the line, the world still red, the pain everywhere. A warning about oxygen levels flashed, the words and numbers blurred.
"Don't pass out! Don't pass out!"
Hands grabbed beneath his shoulders. He felt the railing strike his thighs, heard Cleaver request backup into the crackling radio, and then he was being lowered onto the landing's metal grating.
"Something grabbed me," he muttered. "Something grabbed me. It grabbed me. Something grabbed me."
Over and over he repeated it, as Cleaver and the intern appeared behind the red alerts, their faces blurry, and the sky above them an indigo black slash, just barely lighter than the dark chasm walls.
"Nothing grabbed you," Cleaver said. "You just slipped and got spooked."
"My foot. I was grabbed. It had me. Something had me. Something..."
"Toby!"
Black danced in his peripherals. Then the intern's voice.
"Cleaver, his leg. Look at his leg."
Toby's vision tunneled. The air was thin. He couldn't get enough of it. His lungs were screaming, his heart about to burst from his chest.
"We have to get him to medical," she said.
It was the last thing he heard before everything went dark. Drill Site 10 provided the best view of the ravine so far. Here, the gorge was widest, and standing on the platform, Nova could easily see down to the bottom.
"Must be flowing fast to not be frozen," she reasoned aloud.
She swept the light of her ray rifle across the water. Her helmet put the external temperature at roughly negative 12 degrees Celsius, but the water was moving quickly west, toward the day side, just as Dr. Tarlow had told them ice melt would. Nova scanned along the edge of the river, expecting to see ice where the water met the ravine walls. There was none. Even fast-moving rivers in the Trios usually had ice along their edges in the winter. Unless... Over the holiday break during her first year at the Academy, Nova had left New Earth for a vacation at the Blaty Resort on Larissa with her then-girlfriend, Aileen. It had been completely outside Nova's budget, from the planet hop flight to the cost of every last meal. Aileen paid for it all, making a show of her wealth. But Nova's favorite part had cost them nothing— a hike to Blaty's hot springs, where they swam in a comfortable 35 degrees Celsius pool, surrounded by snow and ice. Perhaps this Aklis River was the same, heated by a geothermal spring. This water lacked the murky, pale blue color of the Blaty hot springs, though, and there was no steam rising off the surface, either. Maybe this water was somewhere in the middle, heated just slightly so as to keep from freezing, but still quite cold. Nova brought her light over the water again. The light on Dylan's weapon momentarily crossed hers.
"Wait! Bring it back! Do you see that?"
Nova said as the beams joined again. Something was moving just beneath the surface, dancing in the water's current. A series of flat, wide ribbons.
"What is that?"
The radio crackled at Dylan's hip, Cleaver shouting something unintelligible.
"Say again,"
Dylan responded. The unit hummed static. And then one word cut through, impeccably clear.
"Back up."
Dylan sprinted from the landing, and Nova tore after her. Thea saw her own horror and confusion mirrored in Cleaver's expression. The suits were incredibly durable, made for planetary exploration. They shouldn't simply tear. But there was no denying that Toby's suit had, that the material was shredded at the ankle, that Toby was now exposed to Atmo, and bleeding everywhere. If the blood loss didn't kill him, the cold could. Toby's eyes fluttered shut, his body slumped onto the landing.
"Cleaver, we have to get to medical,"
Thea said again.
"Hold this."
The security detail passed her the radio he'd used to contact Dylan, then unhooked Toby's harness clip and heaved the man onto his shoulder. Thea bolted upright, glancing into the chasm. Everything was as they'd left it. The bodies frozen solid, the tattooed man half-zipped into the body bag. As the flares died, flickering and sputtering, it almost made the corpses appear to move. Thea turned and ran. She sprinted after Cleaver, through clouds of steam, toward the elevator. A whooping alarm suddenly kicked on.
"Adverse weather conditions,"
a robotic voice announced as lighting mounted along the catwalks flashed red.
"Reactor powering down in 5 minutes. All personnel must evacuate and seek shelter immediately."
Thea kept running, past drill landings, over bloody footprints, through more steam. All the while, her visor flashed updates. She was sweating profusely. Her blood pressure had reached a questionable high.
"Dylan!" she yelled into the radio. "Toby's injured, and we're heading for medical. Get back to the rover ASAP!"
Silence.
"Dylan, do you read me?"
Nothing. Nothing but the alarm and the lights and that looping warning.
"Adverse weather conditions. Reactor powering down in 4 minutes. All personnel must evacuate and seek shelter immediately."
Thea's skin prickled. She glanced over her shoulder and saw only steam and flashing lights. Cleaver stopped unexpectedly, and Thea barreled into his back.
"It's just us,"
someone shouted. Dylan and Nova emerged through the steam, hands held in surrender. They must have received Cleaver's original request for backup after all.
"Adverse weather conditions. Reactor powering down in 3 minutes. All personnel must evacuate and seek shelter immediately.
Everyone ran to the elevator, and Nova slammed the grated door shut. Cleaver set Toby on the floor as the car rattled to life. It seemed slower than before.
What the hell happened?
Dylan dropped to her knees beside Toby. His eyes rolled, head rocking side to side. He was going into shock, from pain, maybe blood loss. The visible portion of his leg was red with cold, and the blood was oozing everywhere.
Why didn't you report an injury?
We tried, Thea gasped out. Storm must have interfered.
He said something grabbed him, Cleaver explained.
Grabbed him?
Dylan glanced up. Thea explained what they'd witnessed, how Toby had sunk into the bodies as though they were quicksand, then begun screaming. The robotic voice announced that they had only 2 minutes of power remaining. If they got stranded in the elevator...
What could have possibly grabbed him?
Nova said. Nobody can tear an environmental suit with their hands.
Maybe it was cut open on some gear we couldn't see?
Cleaver said.
Maybe.
But Dylan looked unconvinced.
Did you get a body for the autopsy?
Does it look like it?
Cleaver growled.
Adverse weather conditions. Reactor powering down in 1 minute. All personnel must evacuate and seek shelter immediately.
All right, Dylan said. Let's get Toby to medical. Soon as this storm passes, we're coming back for a body.
It was a ludicrous suggestion. They needed to get Toby stabilized and comfortable in an isolation chamber, and above all, they needed to contact Hevitz. But there wasn't time for an argument now. Thea could make her case in the rover. Lights outside the gate flashed as the panel inside the elevator refreshed. Level 5. Level 4.
Reactor powering down in 5, 4,
level 3.
3, 2,
level 2.
1.
The digitized display went blank and the car lurched to a standstill. Dylan threw the door open, revealing a waist-high wall. It took Thea a second to realize this was the floor of the garage, that they'd crawled to a stop barely a meter shy of their destination. Dylan hoisted herself up and out of the car, then reached back in for Toby, who Nova and Cleaver lifted to her. The floor was smooth and slick, Thea's hands unable to find purchase, but with a boost from Nova, she swung a leg up and managed to scramble into the garage. Nova came next, followed by Cleaver. He picked up Toby, and again, the group was running, through the garage and into the storm beyond. The sky had filled with dark clouds that crackled with electricity, and as soon as Thea stepped from the shelter of the hangar, the wind pushed her violently. Each step became 3 or 4, the magnitude of the storm shoving her east toward the night side. She struggled to stay on course. Thea could see the rover just ahead, its form glinting as lightning clapped. But as the others reached the vehicle, Thea was propelled right past it, her hands flailing wildly for a door latch, but coming up short. They should have parked the rover inside the garage. They should have turned around the moment Nova sensed a storm. They should have contacted Hevitz immediately after finding Pitch Evans. There were a lot of things that should have been done differently, but none of that would get Thea to safety. She crouched down, regaining her balance, then turned and leaned into the wind. Head hunched, she half crawled, half walked toward Rover 1. A voice carried through the raging wind, urging her on. Dirt and rubble flew, slamming into Thea like a downpour of rain. Her helmet sheltered her from the onslaught, but it was almost impossible to fight the instinct to keep her head down, to protect her face and eyes. Thea forced herself to glance up, squinting, searching. A faint blue-white light glowed through the dust. Headlights. Lightning flashed, and she saw them just briefly, only a few meters ahead. Cleaver was holding the door to the rover open with his back, both arms reaching for her. Her visor flashed warnings. She lunged with her last bit of strength. A piece of debris flew at her head. She turned to dodge it, and it clipped her in the shoulder, throwing her backward. The momentum of her fall, combined with the force of the wind, sent her tumbling end over end. Thea was weightless, longer than felt natural, and when she slammed to a halt, her back flared with pain. The world had gone dark. Any lighting that had existed in the state of dusk was now completely blotted out by the storm. Around Thea, the air danced with particles of dirt. Had she been thrown into the crater that Black Quarry's bridge spanned? It wouldn't have been a long fall, a meter or two, but the rover wouldn't be able to follow. She had to get back to them. If she could just locate their headlights again. Thea pushed to her feet, straightened. Something dark hurtled at her head. This time she was too slow. The rock hit her helmet with a nasty crack, and she fell to her knees, stunned.
"He's losing too much blood,"
Cleaver shouted beside Nova.
"I know,"
she shouted back, and used a long piece of gauze from the rover's med kit to tie a tourniquet high on Toby's leg.
"Shut up and let me focus."
Nova peeled the liner off a second bandage. The adhesive side shone, and she positioned it over Toby's wound, trying to steady her hands against the constant rocking of the rover. Short for second skin, the nanomesh dressings were designed to quicken clotting and draw out bacteria, preventing infection and slowing bleeding until further medical attention could be received.
"It's not gonna help him if you don't fucking apply it,"
Cleaver roared.
"Shut up!"
Everything had gone to hell, and Nova couldn't help but blame Dylan. If she'd only waited to search the drilling sites, or turned to Hevitz for their instruction, they wouldn't have lost the intern, and Toby sure as hell wouldn't be bleeding all over the rover. His leg was a mess, but the suit was shredded enough to reveal most of the wound. All she had to do was slow the bleeding. Nova lowered the bandage, hands shaking. The rover bucked over a rut, and she was flung forward, the dressing clinging to Toby's suit rather than the wound. Nova swore as she tried to peel it off Toby's suit, but it was ruined. Useless.
"He's still got a pulse?"
she asked Cleaver as she reached for the med kit.
"Yeah, but at the rate he's bleeding..."
"I know, I know." She found a new second bandage and stripped off the liner. The wind let up momentarily, and before Nova missed her opportunity, she slapped the bandage down. Success. Running her gloved hand along Toby's leg, she secured it in place. The dressing seemed to dissolve beneath her fingers, adhering to Toby's skin.
"How much farther?"
she shouted to Dylan.
"I can't see shit,"
came the reply. Nova glanced up. Sleet and hail the size of golf balls bounced off the rover. Two cobwebbed cracks that weren't there earlier now marred the windshield. How the hell was Thea going to survive this? Nova had begged for Dylan to wait, insisted that they needed to search for her. But they couldn't find Thea's helmet light in the madness, and Dylan had made the executive decision to bring Toby to medical and return for the intern later. Nova feared there'd be nothing to find. It wasn't right. Nova would have picked saving Thea over saving the enormous prick bleeding before her. And yet, here she was, bandaging his leg.
"Pulse?"
she again asked Cleaver.
"There, but faint."
Nova looked down at Toby. His eyes were closed, but twitching behind the lids. Thea Static heard the alerts before she saw them. The beeping noise brought her out of a fog, and she forced her eyes open, one after the other. Consciousness lost for 13 seconds. Her vitals flashed, all relatively stable, considering her predicament. But then her eyes caught a new alert, and everything began to spike. Suit breach. Oxygen reserves at 70%. She searched the tempered glass, eyes burning in their sockets as she stretched the limits of her vision. And there, above her left eye, up near her hairline, was a small crack. The rock that had struck and stunned her. She looked beyond the glass, desperate to find the rover's headlights. There were none. The only bit of light that now existed in the raging storm was the small glow provided by her helmet's headlamp and the crackling of electricity in the overhead clouds. She'd lost her flashlight during the fall, but had possessed the sense to holster her stun gun when they first left the drilling base's garage. Not that the weapon would do her any good now. It was the flashlight she needed most. The alert in her visor updated. Oxygen reserves at 66%. She needed to find shelter. If the atmosphere didn't kill her when her oxygen reserves ran out, prolonged exposure to the cold might. Would a hairline fracture in her helmet be enough for her to freeze to death? She didn't want to find out. Thea pushed upright, only to have the wind beat her back to all fours. She tried again, staying hunched over as she attempted to run. The wind tossed her like a rag doll. She cartwheeled, end over end, thrown farther east until she slammed to a halt against sloped earth. The air went from her lungs, and she gasped wildly. When it returned, she felt along the curve, finding a lip, a shallow crater. Thea heaved herself up and over. She couldn't fight the wind, that much was obvious, so she decided to move with it. If she could only find some shelter, a cave, a shallow ravine, she might be able to wait out the storm and find her way back when the weather cleared. Each step sent her running forward, the wind shoving her on. At least now the ground was blessedly even, rolling slightly, but free of craters or fissures. It started to sleet, sheets of icy water assaulting her, making the earth beneath her feet slick and treacherous. Unable to see anything, she stumbled on, hail piercing her shoulders and back like knives. Lightning flashed, revealing something large and smooth just ahead. Clearly man-made. What was it Dylan had said when reviewing maps just earlier? Not far from the old Witch Hazel bunker. The wind pushed at her back, moving her like a leaf toward the structure. It was a storm wall, she realized. She closed in on it with frightening speed, and then she was upon it, throwing her hands out to minimize impact. Thea's wrists flared with pain, but she ignored the ache, feeling along the wall. It was smartly angled, allowing the wind to ride up and over it. She walked beside it until she discovered it was actually a multitude of walls, each section recessed slightly from the next, leaving enough room for a rover to gain passage. Likely in preparation for the very predicament she now found herself in. A researcher caught in poor weather could still gain access to the bunker, while the bunker remained protected from the storm. Thea slipped between two walls and found the space on the other side spared from the worst of the wind. A low and sprawling construction sat ahead, shaped like an off-kilter pinwheel. The entire thing was as dark and unadorned as the Ockley's landscape. Oxygen reserves at 62%. Thea ran, now propelled by only her legs. They ached with exhaustion. Sleet pummeled her shoulders, threatening to beat her to the ground. She felt cold, suddenly. Deathly cold. At the end of the bunker's nearest spoke, Thea found an airlock. A faded Hevitz logo adorned the door. Please still have power. Please! She slammed her fist into the access panel. Miraculously, the door slid open. She stumbled into the bay, pressed the button to close the door behind her. It sealed shut. The sound of depressurizing air was the most glorious song she'd ever heard. Every muscle shaking with relief, ready to give out, Thea pressed a third button, and the interior door opened to the safety of the bunker. She stepped through, gasping with relief. It was dark, quiet. Feeling blindly, she searched for a panel to activate the lights, the heat. Her hands twitched with cold as they grazed a set of breakers. Odd that the airlocks were powered and the bunker was not. Then again, the entrance could be supplied by emergency power. There was no sense heating a bunker if no one was in it. Well, she was here now, and she needed heat. Desperately. She threw the breaker, and white-hot agony roared, scorching every limb. the cold she'd felt replaced with monumental pain. A dozen alerts flashed in her visor. Her heart rate skyrocketed, then dropped to zero. Thea Sadek hit the floor. Dead. He'd retreated to safety at the first sign of the storm. Even now, after 2 months alone on Aklis, the boy knew better than to test the fury of nature. When the storm reached a dangerous intensity, he'd cut all but the emergency power. Weather like this didn't last forever, and he could go without lights or heat. But then she'd come. From his section of the bunker, his skin had prickled, and when he peered through the reinforced grated windows, there she was, a member of the rescue crew, running for the northwest airlock amid the raging elements. He'd padded soundlessly to the bunker's core, then taken the corridor to meet her. When he arrived, it was too late. Then again, he hadn't truly hurried. The boy looked down on the girl. Her mouth was caught in a shape of surprise behind her visor, her brown eyes dazed and lifeless. Dark hair clung to her sweaty neck. She should have known better than to try to reinstate power during an electrically charged storm. But she was young. Far younger than he'd guessed any of the Odyssey crew might be. Perhaps she had no clue what she was up against. Perhaps she was ignorant. He cocked his head in thought. The others would assume she'd perished in the storm. Probably they wouldn't even look for her. It would be easy to let her die. But if he tried to revive her, if he succeeded and earned her trust, he needed an ally, someone who believed him decent and good and worth saving. The boy unfastened her helmet. 5. The Survivor. Witch Hazel Bunker and Celestial Envoy. Aklis, Fringe One System. Thea came alive gasping, looking into a set of foreign eyes. She felt the ghost of pressure the young man's mouth had made against hers, and her palms flew to his chest. Before she could shove, his hands closed over her wrists, and he moved away from her, sitting back on his heels.
"You're welcome,"
he said, and let her go. She scrambled away, feeling at her face, the neckline of her suit. "You took off my helmet."
"Again, you're welcome."
Inside, she reminded herself as her back hit the bunker wall. Not exposed to Atmo. Inside. Safe. Even still, it was cold enough that she could see her breath in the air. The corridor was illuminated only by faint orange lights that ran like piping along the edges of the floors and ceiling. Things were still running on minimum power, and whatever she'd done with the breaker had accomplished nothing but nearly killing her. She glanced at the airlock to her right, the darkness of the bunker waiting to her left, and then the stranger crouched before her. He wore a set of work coveralls, only the upper half was unzipped and the sleeves were tied around his waist in a makeshift belt. A security vest hung open over a stained t-shirt. Along his collarbone, the dark tendril of a tattoo crept over his tan skin. The tattoo reminded her of Pitch Evans. The warning: don't trust the kid. But this stranger didn't look like a kid. Dark scruff shadowed his jaw, wild hair hung to his shoulders, half of it pulled back and secured in a bun at the top of his head. Even hunched in a low crouch, forearms resting on his knees, he had an assertive confidence Thea had come to expect of adults, not her peers, the kind of confidence she was still struggling to find herself. And yet, there was a youthfulness to the boy's eyes, a fullness to his cheeks. He was her age, Thea reasoned, maybe a little older, certainly more adult than child. But if Pitch Evans was anything like the Odyssey crew, anything like Dylan or Toby, he likely defined a kid as anyone incapable of working a job for Hevitz in an official capacity. A student, like herself, an intern. Could this boy be an intern, too? Surely Hevitz didn't take on interns for confidential operations like Black Quarry.
Are you Black Quarry? She asked.
Yes.
His voice was low and scratchy, like he wasn't in the habit of using it.
Where's the rest of the crew?
Dead.
Thea swallowed. She'd expected as much, but hearing it...
How did...
Look, if you want to talk, I'm not doing it here. Come on.
He extended a hand as he stood. He was taller than Thea expected, but leaner, too. The coveralls and vest added bulk, made him look bigger when he was crouched beside her. Dirt was wedged beneath his fingernails and pressed into the creases of his skin, but otherwise, his hand was impeccably unmarred for a drilling technician. No cuts or scars or bruises. Thea looked again at his outfit, part drilling uniform, part security detail.
Don't trust the kid.
I'm not moving till you tell me what happened.
I saved your ass is what happened. You'd be dead if I hadn't revived you. So how about you say thanks, for starters?
She said nothing. Grunting, he reached for her, and Thea scrambled to her feet, grabbing for her weapon. His eyes followed every movement, her fingers unsnapping the holster, her hand lifting the stun gun free. As she brought the barrel up, his thick brows lifted in amusement.
I could take that away from you before you even started to pull the trigger.
He was lying. No one was that fast. But there was a calmness to his expression that unsettled her. What had he done to survive on this rock when everyone else had perished? What was he willing to do still?
Who the hell are you?
Thea asked, leveling her aim.
Amos Lashley,
he said, showing her his palms.
Hevitz drilling crew and sole survivor of the Black Quarry op. I've had one hell of an 8 weeks, but by all means, threaten to shoot me. It's not like I've had it rough or anything.
I can see Celestial Envoy,
Dylan shouted from the front.
We're almost there.
Nova braced a hand against the side of the rover. There was a bump as Dylan drove them over the lip of the gangplank, and then the scream of the storm's wind was cut in half as they came to a halt inside the hangar.
Tarlo? Sullivan?
Dylan said, trying the intercoms in desperation.
Damn, still down.
She threw open the door and scrambled out. In the back seat, Nova did the same.
Let's get him to medical.
Nova grabbed Toby beneath the arms, ready to heave him from the vehicle, but he flinched beneath her touch. His eyes flew open, and Nova lurched away with surprise.
Toby!
He stared blankly at the roof of the rover.
Toby, you okay, man?
He sat up slowly, swaying, dazed, but there was a bit of color in his cheeks again. Maybe it wasn't as bad as they'd first thought. He could have just fainted from shock, and now that the second had slowed the bleeding, regained consciousness. Thea would know better. But the intern wasn't here. Because they'd left her. Nova shook her guilt aside, put on a professional face.
What happened back there?
She asked as she helped Toby from the vehicle. He paused at the door, feet planted on the floor outside the rover, but body still slumped into the seat.
I...
He tried to touch his forehead and simply grazed the glass of his helmet.
I fell?
He said after a moment.
No, I was grabbed.
I don't understand.
His head jerked to face Nova.
We have to get off this rock. We gotta go now.
Beads of sweat lined Toby's brow, and his lip practically trembled with fear. Nova had never seen him anything but cocky and argumentative, cool and composed.
Toby, if you're messing with us, if this is all some elaborate sick joke...
He grabbed her arm, the pressure vice-like.
Get us off this planet!
His fingers dug in hard.
Get us out of here now!
As Nova buckled in pain, Dylan appeared at her side, pinching just below Toby's elbow and causing him to relinquish his grip. We're headed to medical first to get you stable, Dylan told him calmly. The storm's too bad to leave right now regardless.
It's not right, he went on. It's wrong. Something's wrong. Callahan!
Dylan barked. He twitched as though he'd just received a jolt of electricity, then keeled forward. Nova grabbed him at the shoulders to keep him from falling from the rover, then pushed him back to a sitting position. He raised his head wearily, and she spotted the blood.
Nosebleed, she said to the others.
Then to Toby,
come on, asshole. Can you walk?
She helped him from the rover, but he walked alongside her for only a few steps before his body was raked with another tremor. His head twitched, and he shoved Nova. She went staggering aside, barely able to keep her footing.
I want it off!
Toby screamed, pawing at the helmet.
Get it off me!
Nova raced in, grabbing at his arms. Blood now flowed freely from Toby's nose.
What the hell is wrong with him?
Cleaver said, rushing to aid Nova.
Toby, you have to calm down, Dylan said. Do you understand me? Calm down.
The technician took a few deep breaths, nodding frantically. With Cleaver's assistance, Nova was able to support Toby as they made their way through Celestial Envoy, Dylan in the lead. The twitching and spasms began again within minutes, and by the time they entered the med bay, Toby was struggling against them with unbelievable strength, clawing at his helmet.
Get it off! Get it off me! Get it off now!
Tarlo! Sullivan!
Dylan shouted in the direction of the research labs. Nova kicked Toby in the back of the leg, causing him to buckle to one knee. It gave her and Cleaver the smallest moment of relief from his thrashing, and as he attempted to stand, they forced his hands behind his back. With Dylan at his feet, the three of them lugged Toby onto one of the operating tables, then forced his limbs into the wrist and ankle restraints. Even once secured, Toby continued to arch and struggle. Tarlo burst into the med bay, Sullivan on her heels. Nova made the briefest eye contact with her cousin, his expression asking, "You okay?" and her frantic nod responding, "At the moment." The doctor, however, looked at no one but Toby.
"We need to sedate him."
"Don't you want to know what happened first?" Dylan asked.
"It doesn't matter what happened. He clearly needs to be sedated."
"Oh my God,"
Cleaver said, backing away from the table.
"His eyes!"
Nova followed Cleaver's gaze. Toby's eyes were filled with blood, their whites now an unnatural dark red.
"They're hemorrhaging," the doctor said, grabbing a syringe. "I need to get his helmet off."
Everything was blurry. His vision, his senses, even his own thoughts. Nothing made sense. Toby's eyes felt like they were burning. He wanted to claw them from his skull. Something warm and metallic dripped into his mouth. He wanted to claw at that, too. He kept trying to stop himself, but his hands had their own agenda. He thrashed, his limbs fighting against his restraints. He could feel warmth around his wrists now, too, his skin surely split from his struggles. He didn't care. If he could only get this helmet off, if he could just get the blood off his face, the heat from his limbs. He gagged, hacking on air, spitting out blood. There was nothing else to eject. Except there was. He had to be sick. They needed to let him throw up. A figure moved above him, fuzzy, gray. There was a click, and his helmet lifted free. For one blessed moment, Toby's lungs filled with fresh, clean air. He bit at it, gasped at it, tried to drink it all up. Then the needle came down, burrowing into his neck. Like before, he felt it moving through him, a current, a fire. He tried to sit, jump, run. He kicked and thrashed and roared. The wave was coming again, ready to overtake him. The metallic taste in his mouth faded. The room blurred further, morphing into dense fog. Toby leaned back on the table. His head lolled to the side, and his eyes fell shut. When Thea didn't shoot, Amos walked away, heading deeper into the bunker.
"We have to go," she called out. "I need to get back to Celestial Envoy. Regroup with my team."
"In this storm? Be my guest."
Thea peered through the airlock.
"How long do they usually last?"
"Couple minutes, hours, days. They're all different."
"Days?"
She pushed to her feet and jogged after him. He led the way toward the bunker's hub, which housed mess quarters and a small infirmary. A hallway wrapped around the centralized facilities, providing access to the various corridors branching from it. Amos turned down one labeled Bunk 3. It dead-ended at a sliding door, which he gripped along the seams.
"Everything's on manual during the storm," he explained as he pried the door open.
Beyond, Thea could make out private living quarters, hexagonal in shape. Dr. Tarlow had called this room, or one like it, home all those years ago.
"I know this looks easy," he prompted, "but the door's actually kinda heavy."
She considered the room beyond, how the door would slide shut once she stepped inside, leaving them very alone.
Don't trust the kid.
But she was no less alone out here in the hall than she'd be in the living quarters. Her crew was back at Celestial Envoy, or dead in the storm. His crew had long since perished, and besides, she had the gun. If he meant her harm, he wouldn't have bothered reviving her. Thea walked through the doorway. Immediately to her left was a bathroom, and to her right was a small storage closet holding a pair of work coveralls, a few extra enviro suits, and one ray rifle surrounded by battery mags.
So much for being the only one with a gun.
The furniture in the sitting room was antiquated, styled with the rounded, soft angles that had been in fashion 50 years earlier. It reminded Thea of her room back home, furnished with pieces purchased at second-hand stores or donated to the foster home by others. Amos had set up a portable emergency cooking stove on the table in the sitting area. A box of freeze-dried fruit was on one of the chairs. Was this what he'd been living off? Hot water and fruit rations? Surely an operation like Black Quarry would have plenty of supplies, enough for a single survivor to eat better than this. There were two bunk beds in the room, but only one of the four mattresses was made. Thea sat on it and stared out the window. A wind chime made of kitchen utensils bounced and flailed, sometimes connecting with the glass, but never making a sound she could hear. Thea missed the sun, natural lighting. Her world had been blindingly, sickeningly white at Northwood Point. She thought she hated it, but this was worse. She couldn't wait to feel the humidity of Hearth City again, to have the air so thick and heavy that it coated her like a wet second skin.
"Here."
Amos pressed a mug of hot tea into her hands. Without her helmet, she could smell it, the sweet grass and citrus wafting up to her nose. Fresh. Real. So opposite the sterile, filtered air of her suit. The cryo chamber. Odyssey. It made her think of coffee shops she used to visit with Mel. The smell was so blessedly normal, it nearly made her cry.
"Thanks."
Thea sipped the tea.
"So, Amos, I need to know what happened."
"It's Cohen, actually," he said. "I'm named after my father, but Cohen's my middle name, and I prefer that to the constant reminder that I'm living in his shadow."
"Oh, okay.
This is where you tell me what I'm supposed to call you," he prompted.
"Thea."
"Thea what?"
"I can't possibly see why that matters."
"Everything matters,"
Cohen countered.
"Fine, Thea Sadek. Now, what the hell happened?"
"We landed, got set up, and built the drill site," he said, pouring a cup of hot water for himself. "Shit hit the fan 2 weeks after we broke ground."
"The water was toxic?"
"Something we touched was. It started with Lee, one of our technicians, then spread."
"A virus? Bacteria?"
Maybe. We never had the time to figure out what was happening. Not scientifically, at least. By the time we realized we needed to start quarantine procedures, the affected were out of control, clawing at their skin, their faces, their eyes, clawing at others. They overran Celestial Envoy within 24 hours, cut the power, and sabotaged the comm gear. We tried barricading what we could, the mass, the bridge. Nothing worked. The visuals flashed through Thea's mind. The overrun hangar deck, the halls, the fried doors to the bridge. The dead crew members spread through the ship. Cohen seemed almost eerily calm, given all he'd just told her.
How'd you survive?
I hid.
Thea frowned. That's it?
First the ship's air vents, then this bunker. I never said it was heroic, but I did what I had to do.
Cohen set his mug on the table.
So are you really Hevitz, or were you just unlucky enough to crash land here?
Thea must have appeared confused, because he clarified with,
You don't really look like search and rescue. What are you, 15?
17.
You look young. That's all.
So do you.
I'm 20,
he replied.
You want to see my Hevitz ID?
Don't trust the kid.
Yeah, maybe.
Hevitz sends me a rescue team that includes a kid bright enough to electrocute herself, he grumbled, ignoring her request. Just my luck.
It was like the warden back home all over again, her biggest insecurity thrown in her face. If you don't need us, feel free to stay on this rock when we leave. Cohen pinched the bridge of his nose.
Sorry. Sorry. Look, I've never really been good with people, and that's only gotten worse after being alone for 2 months. You're just not what I was expecting.
And I never expected to be here. I was interning at a research base on Sotir when Hevitz issued a distress call on Black Quarry's behalf. Our crew was apparently the closest, and now here I am. She went on to explain how the company had shipped the Odyssey crew out in a hurry, instructing Dylan to bring along Thea's mentor because of the doctor's knowledge of the site, and how an additional backup crew was still on the way.
They'll be the true search and rescue, the crew you've been hoping for.
Cohen didn't seem relieved by this.
Oh, hold up. The doctor. What's her name?
Lisbeth Tarlow, Thea said.
The Lisbeth Tarlow?
Cohen stood so abruptly he rattled the table, sending some of his tea sloshing over the lip of the mug.
Tarlow, who was stationed here with Witch Hazel as a kid? She's part of your crew?
Thea nodded.
I need to talk to her. Right now.
But the storm
is over.
Thea twisted toward the window. It was still dark out. Aklis was always dark. She needed to get used to that. But the wind chime now hung idly, swaying in nothing worse than a breeze.
They can clear out as quick as they strike, Cohen explained. Let me patch your helmet.
He disappeared into the closet and returned with a patch kit that he applied to the fracture. His work dried almost instantly, the damage to the visor barely visible.
No one should notice the difference, Cohen said, passing her the helmet. But if they do, pretend like the glass always had a patch. You don't need to give anyone a reason to be suspicious. Everyone with Black Quarry turned on one another. No one trusted anyone, so no one could work together.
Right. Thanks.
What the hell were you doing out in that storm anyway?
He asked as he began rummaging around in the closet, gathering gear. Dylan wanted to check out the drill point where Lee was injured. We found the dead crew members, which distracted us from the storm. Our tech guy got hurt, and I was struck by debris as we brought him back to the rov-
Hurt how?
Cohen asked, spinning to face her.
He fell, trying to gather one of the bodies for an autopsy. His leg got torn up.
We need to go, now. Do you have any idea what your crew brought back to Celestial Envoy?
He grabbed an orange backpack from the closet and became a tornado, darting from one corner of the room to the next, stuffing items in the bag. A thermos, some of the dried fruit, a framed photo from his nightstand.
You said it was in the water, Thea said.
Or the rock.
But it was spread person to person.
And everyone's now dead.
Cohen turned to face her, bag hanging limp from his hand.